are back. You are listening to Davin's Den on the Break. That was Catchpenny, band out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Met them in 2009 when we were both overseas in Iraq. They gave me their CD. I actually like their music a lot. Last time I saw them doing anything was 2011. So I don't know if they really do anything, but I think you could still catch their get their music on iTunes. So that's Catchpenny. Good band right there.
Nice.
Yes. Yes, it is. Right. So on the last segment, farts. So you're
farts and presents.
Yeah.
Are you talking about
which can be construed as one and the same?
Yeah, the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah.
Sure. Are you talking about during our show or during the break?
It all's the same. So anyway, you guys are listening to Davin's Den. Number to call in. Still a little bit of time on Tuesday night. 845-986-8804. 845-986-8804. So, yeah, as I was saying before at the top of the show, I was talking to Julie Power of the Sydney Morning Herald in Australia. She's the one who did this big spread that got picked up in a lot of places, really catching fire. One of the victims is really doing a lot of press now because of this. She did a lot of work on internet scammers and everything. So I interviewed her. She actually she talked to us prior to the articles coming out, and we got a nice little write-up for what we do with the scammers. Joe is called a character in his work that he does. So it was a good piece. So I wanted to discuss with her, you know, what her preconceptions were, how it affected her emotionally to talk to these people, what she learned and everything. Because, you know, at this point we're kind of jaded. And we talk to a lot of victims. But
yeah.
So I wanted to do that. But it also happened to be that the hostage situation was happening in downtown Sydney, as it were. So I wanted to talk to her a little bit about that. So I think we had a really interesting conversation. This is part one. We'll play part two next week. But this is my interview with Julie Power of the Sydney Morning Herald. Julie Power, a journalist for the Sydney Morning Herald in Australia. Julie recently wrote two stories involving internet scammers. Welcome to Davin's Den, Julie.
Hi, Davin. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, except for it's a pretty scary morning in Sydney today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, this wasn't really on our agenda to talk about, but yeah, that you guys had this self-proclaimed cleric holding up a chocolate shop, taking hostages. He's now dead. And unfortunately, I think one civilian is dead. Is that right?
I think two others are dead too.
Two others are dead. All right, it's changed since the last time I checked. And your husband works at the bank right next door.
Yeah, my husband works in the Reserve Bank of Australia, which is right next door. And yesterday, I called him and I said, "You know, are you all right?" And he said, "Oh yeah, we've been told we're locked in the building," which is typical of him to be fairly low key. Then I discovered two of my brothers who are lawyers were locked in their buildings, which are in the same spot, very nearby. My sister-in-law is a barrister, had actually been sent home because where he struck was right in the centre of the city.
Right.
And if you can imagine, it's basically like being, you know, someone striking near, you know, near the Liberty Bell or Times Square in New York. It's very similar.
Well, we had something similar to that a couple of years ago in the middle of the city. I'm sure you heard about it. 9/11. I'm sure.
Yeah,
we can relate.
Yes, I was there. I was there.
Yes.
But the fact that that day he was actually at the Federal Reserve Board of Governors and worked continuously all day.
Wow.
And after they'd been evacuated, I said, "Peter, you need to go home. Everybody's been evacuated down there. Haven't you seen what's going on?" He's like, "I was so engrossed in my work."
Well, that's nice that he could put his head down and work like that.
Yes.
So, all right. So, like, Australia, I mean, in America, unfortunately, we're kind of used to these shootings and being threatened by terrorists. But this is something, I mean, you're one of the United States allies. Australia's one of the United States allies and everything. And ISIS has made threats for people to attack Australia. But this is new to you guys. How's it being handled over there?
Well, I think the tension at the moment is whether you handle it as basically a crazy person or whether it's a terrorist attack. I don't think it is a terrorist attack. It's just a very upset individual. But I think, as I told you before, you know, I lived in the United States for years and we finally came home here 3 years ago. And one of the reasons we came home to Australia was that thought that our kids were going to high school. And there are, there are shootings at high schools nearly every week in the United States, in fact, more. There was a shooting in Philadelphia today.
Right.
I mean, these became so much part and parcel of life, and I think that we wanted to come home to a place which was safer.
Well, you guys have much stricter gun laws. Guns are pretty much been banned.
I mean, yeah, we don't have, I don't want to sort of, you know, draw gunfire for some of your listeners, but we don't have your crazy gun laws.
Well, I mean,
gun laws.
I mean, listen, I'm not a huge gun advocate, as people of our show listen to, but we have it in our Constitution, the right to bear arms. So that's why, I mean, that's why it is what it is. It's part of part of our constitution. But you guys had a big massacre over there several years ago. And actually, you're
the massacre down in Tasmania in Hobart. You know, quite a few years when John Howard basically changed the gun laws and tightened all the restrictions, and that was welcomed in, you know, pretty well across the board.
And that was pretty hard for him because he was a conservative, correct?
Yes, you're right. And the members of the National Party, the Country Party, you know, our rural rump, we call them, they were very much opposed to it because, you know, farmers have always wanted to go out and shoot snakes and, you know, feral animals and the rest.
Right.
You know, they had genuine reason for it, but they actually buckled to it and agreed to it.
Now, one of the things that we hear in our country, one of the reasons why people should be allowed to have guns is because of a situation of what happened in Sydney. You know, the gun advocates will say, well, if, you know, we were allowed to open carry, have our guns, somebody within that chocolate shop could have taken
it. Yeah, but imagine if they'd all had guns. Imagine what would have been happening then.
Well, I'm asking, I know what could happen.
Some states in America with your guns underneath your jacket, right?
Yeah, and in the clubs where I perform, too, unfortunately, which is scary for me. But
really?
Yeah, they're allowed to carry it into bars and nightclubs and everything. But what I wanted to ask you is, so are the people that, because I'm sure there's still people that are pro-guns in Australia, are they starting to make some noise about this, of making...
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they are, it's not something that I think they get all that much airtime for here.
Oh, okay, because in the United States, we'd have the president of the NRA, you know, he goes out immediately after something like that happens. Because, I mean, you're...
Oh, yeah, he defends it as ammunition to defend other people's right to bear guns to defend themselves. Well, I just think that basically if you'd had everybody carrying in that shop last night, it would have been an absolute disaster. Just think of all the bystanders who would have been killed.
Now,
as it was, it seemed to go down as best it could have possibly have gone down. I mean, a tragedy nonetheless.
I saw a couple of interesting things that I don't know if I would see in the United States in a similar situation. First of all, I saw you guys have a very small Muslim community in Australia compared to what we have in countries in Europe. But I saw that the Muslim community in Australia immediately condemned the attack. So that was good to see.
Yes, they did. And one of the actually really lovely things which was trending on Twitter yesterday and last night and today has been, I think it's a campaign with a hashtag, I'll ride with you.
Right, I was just going to get to that.
Where young Australians are saying to other people and older Australians, you know, if you feel you're being discriminated against today because you wear a veil or because you basically stand out in some way because of your faith, we will ride with you, we will protect you. And I think that's a very, you know, it really is incredibly, I don't know, I find it very heartwarming.
When I read both those things about what the Muslims did and what the young people in Australia that you're talking about did, I was heartened by both of those things. And, you know, like I said, when we have these attacks here, the Muslim community in the United States, not that they're for these attacks, I don't think they are, but they generally remain silent, which really aggravates a lot of other American citizens. And there are people that are supportive of the Muslims, but they usually get shouted down in this country by the xenophobes. So it's kind of interesting watching what's going on in your country, because this, like I said, this is really the first time where you guys, that I can recall, a homeland possible terrorist attack.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the thing is you will hear people coming out with horrible, racist, you know, slants against Muslims, and that's one of the reasons why this Twitter stream started. It basically, in a way, as an antidote, or basically to fend it off before it actually occurred. But we've had horrible racist outbreaks on buses against people who are Asian. We've had them against people who are, you know, Muslim youth. You know, we've had it. So really, it's not as if we are perfect and we have these, you know, horrible racist underbelly like the United States.
Well, that's heartwarming.
Yes, isn't it?
In the United States, though, I mean, the Muslims are fairly integrated into our society, where, as you go into Europe, especially like France, they're not as integrated. Is the Muslim community, small as it is, integrated in Australian mainstream culture?
No, not as well as some, say, European migrants who came in the 40s, 50s, 60s, who are now very well integrated. I mean, there are still basically what you would call nearly enclaves where people will speak Arabic and really won't speak English.
Right.
But that's probably because there are new migrants. Many of them have come to Australia without much education or much money, and they're using each other for support. So I think basically as they become, you know, they're educated, their English improves, I mean, they will spread throughout society. But at the moment, I mean, the population is spread out, but there are pockets of very sort of, you know, high concentration of people who worship Islam.
Well, do you think in lieu of these attacks, because I remember after 9/11, our security just going to ball games or going into buildings increased exponentially with it, the metal detectors. I mean, this was right in the heart of Sydney. This is your biggest city and everything. This was right in the middle of it. Do you expect to see increased security affecting everyday life there?
Well, we've already got increasing amounts of what they call bollards, you know, those sort of things to stop people from driving into buildings. We've already got, I mean, where my husband works at the RBA, there are, you know, there are three or four security guards downstairs. You have to go through a metal detector kind of gate. And you've got that in most of the big buildings. I think in Parliament House they're estimating that it's going to cost nearly $250,000 a year to improve the security to stop these sorts of incidences.
Well, I think clearly you guys are focusing on the wrong place and not protecting your candy shops.
Well, you know, people will do anything for a bit of sprungly, won't they?
They really will. People, you know, when you got that sweet tooth and you're just jonesing for it, there's really, you know, you're not thinking rationally. I understand, you know. Listen, I've been around enough women who've had that time and of the month and they just need chocolate. So maybe this guy was going through something like that. Maybe it had nothing to do with ISIS or Islam and the guy just really needed chocolate.
Well, yes.
I think that's the theory that we should espouse and push forward.
Devin, if I make jokes about that chocolate shop, I'm not going to make them on the air.
I understand that, but yeah, but you're a credible reporter, and I'm a degenerate. There's a difference. Some look at me.
Romance scams. Come on.
Well, no, I mean, some look at me as a credible reporter, and I do try to report facts and do investigative reporting. But I also say terrible things on the radio, and that might have been part of it right there. I apologize to you. So I guess we should.
No, don't apologize.
Okay. I guess we should move on to why you're here with us today, right?
Yes.
All right.
Why I'm here.
Why you're here.
Because I've written, yeah.
Well, you just did this this big piece, actually two parts, three parts, actually. There was
three parts and a video.
And I was very impressed with the video. We'll get there. You did a report on a couple of victims of romance scams. You featured myself and another scam baiter, people who try to go at the scammers and fight fire with fire, if you will. And then there was an informational piece accompanied with the video. So this was quite the expose that you did. What led to your interest in the victims of these scams?
Oh, it was actually quite a while ago. I was over in WA, Western Australia, and I was talking to a senior policeman over there, and he was telling me that there had been a lot of romance scams he'd been investigating recently. And one of the things that surprised me and perhaps confronted my own prejudice was that many of them were people who I considered to be like me. I mean, they were professional women. They were women who are fairly, you know, affluent. They weren't sort of the sort of image or the, you know, the stereotype of a little old lady or a sad sack sitting behind their computer.
Right.
These seemed to be vibrant, you know, regular people. And also he was saying many men were taken as well as women. So I started to think, really? And then he started telling me about the grooming. And by then I was sort of like really interested because I was fascinated to hear that these scammers basically take a long time in many cases to groom people.
Well, it seemed
and
like
then
there's...
getting back to my old husband who seems to feature in all these conversations, I was telling him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept on coming back saying, oh, they're just all stupid, aren't they?
That's what people think.
Why would you write about that, you know?
Well, that's what people think. People think, and we've talked about this on our show, we've had victims on our show tell their stories. We're actually going to have the one of the victims you spoke about, Tracy. She's actually going to be doing a very lengthy interview with us.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, go on. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, that was a theme which ran through the whole time. And actually, even afterwards, people kept on coming back to me and saying, you know, it was really interesting, and I thought you actually handled it in a sensitive way. But they are. I mean, they were just stupid, weren't they? And one of the things, as I was researching it, mm-hmm. is I started to think that one of the things that the scammers give these people is something that we so rarely get in our lives, and that is what it is. It's this sense of, you know, you have one other person who is focused on you.
That's the word I was
thinking.
Think
about your life, you know, my life, you know, I've got kids, work, I go home, I talk to them briefly about what I've been doing. But, you know, that stage in my life, which is all about someone really wanting to know about me, wanting to hear everything that happened to me that day, telling me that I'm fabulous, seeming to echo back all my interests, seem to have the same dreams. Now imagine, that's a drug, you know, that is an amazing thing. To have that for months and months, night after night, someone telling you that they understand you, they want to be with you. Now that is what they might be, all that might be done in poor English, but the emotion is there. And they are incredibly clever, and that's what I realise, and that's what other people don't realise. And I think that's the hard thing about explaining these scams to outsiders, or love that, don't you? I'm calling other people outsiders now. But to people who haven't talked to these victims or talked to the researchers, is that you sort of see these things in an abbreviated format. You know, you write a story, it's 1,000 words or 3,000 words or whatever it was in the different stories I wrote. And to people, they don't sort of see the hours and hours of the online, you know, text messaging, the conversations where some people do talk to the scammers and they've disguised their voices. They don't read the poetry, some of it originally, not all, just cut and paste.
I got to stop you there. I have not found one African scammer that has quality original poetry. It's all it's all coming from someplace, and it's not their heads. That much I know, because I've Googled the prose. We've done it on our show, actually, the scammer clips that we just posted today on our show, the Davin's Den scammer clips, because my scammer that I was scamming was writing me all this poetry, and of course it's not the way she was usually talking to me, and they have websites for it. So, yeah, I know,
but the thing is...
You're not talking to Shakespeare
poetry,
on the...
and you're right, because when you go through one of the victims, I spoke to Vanessa Gregory, and when I went through, she saved transcripts of the conversations, and when I actually went through, I started cut and pasting and searching for passages, and I saw that over a six-month period, they did reappear. But I think if you're so deep into a relationship with somebody, and it's actually relatively well-written... You don't notice that, and we all repeat ourselves, don't we?
Well, I mean, that is one of the things, because, listen, I've seen enough of these transcripts, and you can, even the well-spoken scammers, they don't write. None of us do. I don't write the way I would with a poem and everything. I mean, it just, all of a sudden, the grammar's proper. They know where to capitalize.
I know, but if I was writing a poem to you, Davin.
I hope you do.
Chances are I probably would go and find something from W.B. Yeats or Dunn. And I would basically send it to you, shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Oh, Davin? Please do. I'd love that.
Yeah. Thou art more lovely.
No, I think what you're talking about, though, is the focus. I mean, you're absolutely right. We don't get that type of attention. If you think about it, you don't have that type of quick emotional feeling like these scammers groom. You don't usually have that unless you're very young, when you're in your teen years or your early 20s. That's when we have these quick, explosive relationships. So it does harken back to that. And here's the difference. I mean, when a guy is having that type of relationship with a girl, he might feel those feelings for her, but he also has an ulterior motive. I mean, if you're on the internet, you know, at least not in real life. I mean, you might do something cyber, but you know that's not part of the equation. So you assume that these feelings are true and real, because all you've had is words and conversations.
Yeah, and it often, I mean, one of the interesting things was speaking to Monica Whitty, the expert from the United Kingdom, and another expert here, Cassandra Cross, a Queensland expert who I spoke to, was basically, they were saying that these scammers, I mean, we have to realise they're in it for the long haul, because they come from, if you think about the difference in the income between the United States, Nigeria, Ghana, you know, increasingly we're seeing scammers in other countries like Malaysia,
Eastern
and other
Europe,
parts of Asia, you know, where incomes are not as great. So basically the payday for them from playing the odds are pretty great if they actually put the time in. So they're there.
Sure.
For 3 months, 6 months, a year. One of the interesting things, I don't know whether they're doing the same research in the United States as what they're doing here, is that our Competition and Consumer Commission has basically been sending letters to people transferring money. And what they've discovered is about 80 to 90%, if not more, of those people are sending money to fraudsters, okay? And when they actually talk to them, a lot of those people have been sending money for a long time. So these are ongoing scams, which have been going on for a long, long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A good scammer will wait a decent amount of time, whether it be a couple of months, 6 months, a year even, before they ask for money. I mean, the bad scammers are the one that hit you in the first couple of days, couple of weeks. Those are the bad ones. But the good ones...
They're getting you so sucked into basically this... I think one of the women I spoke to, Vanessa Gregory, described it as like a Le Carre novel. And I realized it's a bit like that. You get, it's like a, in the theater, you suspend your disbelief. Well, I think, you know, psychologists have another word for it, but in their case, they are. They're suspending their disbelief because they really want to believe in this thing that people so rarely have, that wonderful, you know, where they're just nearly luxuriating in attention.
Well, I know.
How often do we get that?
I know even with our work, I mean, because we did a, I had a very long fake relationship with a scammer, and, you know, it was part of our show, and I would bring it to the audience every week, and they got lost in it. In the soap opera,
yeah.
And everything. They started to wonder what this girl's emotions were towards me. I think I might have played you a couple of clips of it and everything. So, yeah, I mean, and this is, you know, their third party hearing it on the radio. You know, I know what's going on. I'm happily married. But if you put yourself in the spot of somebody who's actually looking for love, some of them can be very convincing.
Well, I seem to remember you, Devin, telling me mm-hmm. that you thought that she, your scammer, whose name
Belinda.
Is... What was it?
Belinda.
Pardon?
Belinda.
Belinda.
Yes.
I think you said to me, I think at one stage Belinda really did love me.
No, I didn't say love. I said I didn't say love. I think she really liked me. I don't know if she ever loved me. But in her defense, I am amazing. But
well, and you hear this from a lot of people, which is that the, you know, it's an end play.
Right.
Where, you know, this, I mean, that's the thing which is so sad is that when you do look at a lot of these cases, you realize that, you know, the details may be different. You
right.
know, it may be a different country, or it may be whatever. But it's kind of like they've all got something which is nearly like, in Hitchcock, the MacGuffin, which is either the money or the certificates or this.
Oh, sure.
You know?
But you heard the audio of mine where I called her from when she was alone and how happy she was to when her man was feeding her lines. There was a big difference. I mean, so there is a possibility, just with this one scammer, where she might have liked me on some level because, you know, we were talking a long time. And everything.
I presume that they do develop some sort of like. I mean, I imagine that it must be very difficult to keep on writing that stuff genuinely to someone who, after a while, you've realised is someone you completely hate. And they probably have a telemarketing centre, the tele scamming centre over there somewhere, where they pass you off. Oh, I can't bear Davin. Can you deal with him, please?
They do pass you off. They do pass you off, but the vast majority of them are very cold. I mean, I've seen it on their websites and everything where, like, you know, this guy was, like, talking to this woman for several years, taking her money. He's like, you know, I've gotten rich off her, but it's a new year, so I'm going to give her to somebody else. I mean, just like an old couch. So I don't want to paint the illusion that these are good guys and, you know, we can turn them. There might be a few, but, you know, if you're listening out there, chances are no.
No, they're not good guys. I mean, and all of them, all women. I mean, that's the other thing is that in many cases you can see that the scams are basically, they're run by men and women, and they're scamming men and women,
yes.
You know, all around the world too. And I think that's the other thing is that the stereotype says that it's only women, but when we look at all romance scams here in Australia, for our research, it shows that, and in the United Kingdom, Monica Whitty's, it shows that, you know, rich or poor, male or female, you can be taken. And I love the quote from Monica Whitty, who has been researching these scams for probably 15 years, and she said she thinks there is a scam for everybody.
Oh, sure.
Even the most cynical of us. So you and me and others,
sure.
We can probably be scammed. We probably have been scammed in a minor way in our lives.
Now, I do want to ask you something. You keep on bringing up the men, and it was mentioned in your video, and a lot of men do get scammed, and most men don't come forward. More women that do come forward.
Yeah.
But I was interested. You mentioned it was in the video that accompanied the articles, but you weren't able to, chose not to include any men in your actual interviews. Was that on purpose?
No, and it drove me absolutely bananas to say, yeah, that the whole time I hunted for a man who I could talk to. The other thing was I really wanted a younger man
mm-hmm.
To talk to, because there was one man who probably would have talked to me, and he was up in Queensland, but he, I don't know, I wanted really fresh meat. I wanted to talk to someone who had...
You wanted young, fresh male meat. Okay, we got that on the radio.
I wanted fresh male meat, as we all do.
I know I do.
So, yeah, I did actually hunt, and I heard about a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there had been one of the interesting things, we're now seeing scams occurring within New South Wales, for example, my state. So there is a recent court case, which is now, I think, about to be heard, where four men were taken by a female scammer and a romance scam here. I tried to get the police to give me their contacts. I tried to get various groups have been dealing with victims to get a man to talk to me, and they wouldn't. And that's part of the problem. That's why this stereotype continues, is that men don't come forward in the same way that women do.
Was it hard?
And I can see why, because, you know, basically, they're just treated. I mean, these victims are treated appallingly, and I think, going back again to Monica Whitty, that sense that they're treated as if, you know, the old days we used to say about rape victims, that they deserved it, which was horrible.
Right.
And I think a lot of the families and friends of these people treat them as if they deserve it. And there's that terrible sense of, I told you so, of course. You don't deserve my sympathy. I told you.
Well, did you have any of those preconceptions of what a typical scam victim was before you sat down with them? You said your husband did. But, I mean, before
I think I did. I think I didn't realize it was sort of so widespread. I didn't realize that the victims were so varied.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do think that there is a commonality among all of them, which is, for the most part, many of them are either isolated or they are lonely, or that certainly is something, you know, which is very sad about them, for the most part. And if they weren't sad and lonely before, I can tell you by the time they've got through their scam and come out the other end, they usually are very, very sad and very, very lonely.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things... So, yes, I think I did have those, and at times I still have those thoughts where I think, how could you? But then I realize again, I pull myself up and think about how long they were scammed for, how long they were groomed for, the attention they got. And I think, wow, that's kind of nice.
Sure.
And in fact, if you talk to Tracy, I think Tracy says that was the happiest time of her life. You talk to some of the other victims that I spoke with, and one of the things that comes through every single one was the, you know, how they felt so loved.
It is a
way that they hadn't felt before.
It is a sense of euphoria and adulation that there is this person out there who presumably is good looking according to their pictures, has all this love and attention for you. It is a drug. What was the most shocking thing that you found after talking to these victims? What, like, really blew you away?
Oh, I think Tracy, there was something that Tracy said at the end of it all, which even now makes me want to cry, which was, after she discovered that her scammer was a 22-year-old Nigerian,
mm-hmm.
she was still so in love, I think, with the thought of him and the photos. So whenever she looked at the photos of this U.S. Marine, she still felt that enormous surge of love. And when she finally spoke to him, she asked him, the real soldier this is, you know, if you saw me today, would you give me the time of day? And he just said, frankly, no. And I just thought, oh, just...
But in a way...
Very confused, and it's very, you know, and it doesn't make sense, but it's just very sad.
But in a way, isn't it almost better that he said that to her?
Yes.
I mean, really, who knows what he's really thinking? I mean, but just... Because if he said, you know what, I might have been attracted to you, I think, you can argue that just would have kept Tracy and any other victim in that situation just keep on, you know, with that dream that this one day could happen.
Mm. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
What do you think about all the victims basically being online and, you know, the whole question of the victims scamming the scammers, the scam baiters? Do you think that's good for them or not?
Do I think victims scam... I don't think victims should be involved in any of this. I tell them all the time.
Very active now. You can see it all over the world. Victims are trying to track down the scammers.
Well, they're trying to do that because the authorities don't do anything. The authorities, you know,
oh, yeah.
Australia, honestly, is probably better than most. I mean, because the United States, the authorities are just terrible with it, and in a lot of countries. In Australia, there's more. But no, I think what these victims do, whether they're running these groups or counseling each other. I mean, somebody has to do it. Somebody has to scam bait. But the problem is that I feel that if they really haven't healed yet, that this just perpetuates the pain as they're constantly immersed in it. I've told Tracy, and, you know, we're going to interview Tracy soon. I've told Tracy that, you know what, when you're done with all your interviews because of your piece, there's more opportunities for her. I really hope for her that she steps away from this just so she can heal. It's like there's nothing more you can do. You have to think about you and separate this from yourself and go back to the life that you once had or something close to that.
Yeah, because otherwise you're living this half-life on the internet or, you know.
Well,
I know her motives are very pure and very generous, but you do worry about...
I tell them...
I mean, are they still in the thrall of the scammer?
Well, they are.
I tell
victims this all the time. I say every day you're dwelling on your scammer or in this anti-scamming world It's another victory. It's another day the scammer wins, because it's another day where that scammer has influenced what you'll be doing with your life. I mean, they do a lot of great work. I mean, and some of them can distance themselves from it. But, I mean, just from a healthy point of view, I think they should get out. Now, I had somebody go off of me who compared it to Alcoholics Anonymous, like, you know, where they're encouraged to help their fellow alcoholic. Yeah, you're talking about a substance. These are real people here, where if you're dealing with scammers, the scammer can bait you right, get you right hooked in. They know what they're doing. These are professionals who have a lot of money, who know how to play mind games. They're very good at what they do, some of them.
Yeah, some of them.
Some of them. I mean, I personally like the ones that are good at what they do, but I have fun with the ones that are terrible at what they do, too, because then we just write terrible poetry back to them. But that's a whole different
story. I think some of the ones who aren't very good, they're the ones that, you know, make me roll my eyes a bit when I see that. But then the other thing is when you read what the regular person, the quality of the text messages or Facebook updates or messages that the average person does when they're in a hurry and they're doing a lot of them over an hour, you realize they're pretty poor.
They are. But you know what?
So it's hard to tell the difference. Sometimes I thought it was hard to tell the difference between the scammer's English and those of the victims.
Yeah, I guess, but I mean, listen.
But there is a syntax thing. I mean, for me, I read it and I think that doesn't read like somebody who learned English as a first language.
It doesn't read like somebody who says they're from Ohio in the United States and just happens to be in Afghanistan with the military right now. It doesn't read like something from Ohio would say. But I know I've tried to convince people.
I just think that anybody who writes within two words, first meeting, yes, my sweetheart, my darling, that should be a tip-off.
Well, actually, Julie...
people do not write that sort of affection.
Actually, Julie,
emotive things in the first text messages or exchanges with you.
I think you're being a little disingenuous, because as you recall, our first emails were filled with all that. So
because you're particularly special.
I am particularly special, as are you. And we deserve
Thank
those types
so
of...
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. All right, that is part one of the interview. End with a little chuckle.
Cool.
All right, so let's talk about the Australia thing at first. I thought that was very timely to get her on the air when all this was going. Her husband was right in the midst of it, and find out how Australia deals with all this stuff. A little different than how we deal with it here.
Yeah.
Incredible that they were just saying, okay, you know, either lock people in or send them home, but get them all out of Center City, you know, for one.
Can you imagine, like even on 9/11, New York City, we didn't evacuate the city.
No.
Could you imagine?
They couldn't. It would have been
the city was on lockdown. You were actually stuck in the city.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't get across a bridge.
You could walk across, I mean, you know, for a while.
Yeah, sure. You could walk across. But
if you had a car, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
my dad got out of the city. But he took the roundabout. Well, I guess the way you get to Tappan Zee, maybe? Maybe he took the Tappan Zee?
Possible.
But how did he get a car?
Yeah, he had a car.
Okay,
he was in he's probably on the Upper West Side.
He probably got out before.
He was there when it was all going down.
Yeah,
but
before they locked down the
whole
city.
Well, yeah, you got to remember during that period there was a period where it was chaos. Nobody knew what the hell. We never experienced anything like that. So he probably had a chance to go. I'm getting out of here, getting a car, and he had a chance to get out before everybody it started settling in and everything started getting locked down. What time did he leave the city?
It was the morning, late morning.
Then
it took him a while to get home. I know it took him several hours.
But you know, at that time, we were just figuring out what was going on. We never experienced anything like this.
Some people got off the island before they said, okay, shut it down.
I thought the coolest thing I heard about that whole thing that Julie was saying, was the Muslims in Australia quickly came out and condemned it.
Yes.
And, despicable, they found this, you know, strongly condemned. You don't get that in the U.S.
I think that probably wasn't publicized as much because there was so much outcry, and it was such a huge, I mean, this,
but even
comparing
when
these two events, you're comparing,
I'm not talking about 9/11. I'm talking about stuff since then.
I'm
talking about stuff since then. You'll see these, you know, speaking on behalf of the Muslims. They'll get them on these on one of the news networks and everything talking.
Right.
And you don't get that strong condemnation all the time. And sometimes it involves arm twisting and everything.
Yeah.
And I know our society desperately wants to hear, hey, we don't like this at all.
Right.
I mean, and a lot of times they'll be silent
in
our country. Where right away, the Muslims in Australia came out, we strongly condemn this. And right away, you know, you had the young people go, we'll ride with you. It seems like in our country, we like to, I guess for ratings, focus on all the hate.
Yes.
All the maniacs screaming their xenophobia seems to be what gets all the airplay in our country, which feeds people that are xenophobes themselves and might be borderline. People go, I don't know how I feel about this, but when you're bombarded by all the hate, go, okay, I guess this is how I should feel.
Well, because that's that sells. It's almost like the whole thing with Ferguson, where the news is just,
oh,
you know.
No. No, no, no.
Yes, yes, yes. Fucking liberals fucking drive me nuts. Anyway, it is because they're feeding on the sensationalism.
Well, it's all media. But that's what I'm saying. That's the difference in the media in our country, and it seems like they take a much more responsible approach. Yeah. On the show. Although I do find it interesting, because in this country, too, the wild gun nuts are like the NRA, like members of the NRA, are a minority in this country, too. But
the extremism is a minority.
Right, but that's what gets all the attention, where she said that there are people who are gun enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Sure.
And who are probably saying, you know, she admitted there's probably people that, are, you know, do, hey, well, you should be able to open carry and all. But they're not getting the airtime to whip everybody up into a frenzy.
This is probably the way the media is in Australia.
It seems a little bit more responsible towards society. Hey, let's not spread hate. Let's keep everybody
and
cool.
And that's a very key thing, what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very key thing. With whatever part of the aisle you're on, because the media here is very irresponsible.
Yeah, yes. They want to whip.
They totally are.
They would rather get everybody all emotional than present facts.
Absolutely.
Yes. Hey, chill
Absolutely.
Out. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
And I hate the tag phrase, but I'm not trying to bag on Fox right now. The media is not fair and balanced in this country.
No.
It's there's this side presents their hyped up like fear juiced up version
really
and that side does theirs.
You really have to flip between Fox and MSNBC to get, you know, figure out what's going on.
And just try to figure out, okay, what's in the middle of what both of these are saying?
Yeah.
That's probably closer to the truth.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the one side, the other side of the truth.
Yeah, it's like somewhere place in the middle of what these two idiots are spouting at me right now is what I should really be thinking. It's criminal to me. When I was first going to school for broadcasting, we were learning a lot about responsible journalism and about the whole idea of, the media's responsibility as the gatekeepers and letting out information or not, and what is... You know, if something is just a rumor, you don't let it out because it's just a rumor. Once you've substantiated fact, then you present them. But you present them unemotionally.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen
anymore. Well, that doesn't sell. It's all the... Here's what happened. Here's what happened in our country. Media became entertainment.
Yes.
The news became not a way to get information, but a way to be entertained.
Yes.
Hence the 24-hour news cycle.
Right.
Everybody's opinion.
And you have to hear a story. And sometimes it intrigues me why a story should be focused on. Now, you know my thoughts about Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's a story about this man that was shot innocently by a rookie cop in a stairwell in a housing project.
Right.
All right. Now, on that whole thing, I'll shop and trade to grab onto that. But the family.
You talk about the one where he wanted to come to the funeral, and the family said
go.
No.
But here's the deal with that. Now you know my thoughts on Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna concentrate and sing, I Can't Breathe or something like that. You know my opinion. But on this one, this is a genuine story. You could say, well, this guy's hanging out in a stairwell. What is he doing there? Probably minding his own business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is the police doing shooting him? There was a mistake. We have to look at it.
Yeah.
Why aren't if you're gonna be upset about something, why don't you rally around that? The cop made a mistake.
Yeah.
And he could be charged. Yeah, for involuntary manslaughter. Well, should there be a grand jury? Absolutely.
I don't want to devolve into Ferguson right now.
I don't
want
to devolve
the hours
into
late.
That. But what I'm saying that is, it's the way where the news. This is the crowd where the news chooses to get the most focus and bang for the buck.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure if people responded to a PBS style broadcast, which was more fact oriented, less personality driven.
Yes,
I'm sure if people reacted to that. That's what we would say.
But
they don't.
But yeah, because I think on both sides of the coin, whether you're for the cops or not, well, there's got to be something done. Yeah.
I think most people
are for the
cops.
Should say so. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not, in that situation, there's not many people going, well, no, he should have been in the still. He's minding his own business. And that's what I'm saying with the sensationalism. And that is a terrible story. And that's an important story. But because there's not that much sensationalism, the news isn't going to wrap themselves
around this much. Well, you're
talking about
the way, you said, like, people for the cops. Right. It's more nuanced than that. And the news tries to make it less nuanced. The news tries to make it black and white, where in all these instances, there's shades of gray. You could debate where the shade of gray is, where the line blurs, but it's not just he's innocent, he's guilty. There's more to it than that.
And in this story, there is, because there's more people, you know, on, you can't, there's not going to be that many people on the other side of the aisle going, well, what was he doing there? He should, there's a lot going to be more people on the aisle going, yeah, that's a problem. That's something that's got to be looked, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So the news decides, well, Jesus Christ, we can't really bang the drum or, you know, people, you know, how many people are you going to get there? Yeah, there was a problem. This innocent man was shot by the cop. I mean, it's blatant.
Yeah.
And the news isn't going to go there and try to stir things up.
No, because they've amped up the volume on both sides so terribly. Nobody's listening to each other. They're just listening to rah, 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 mm-hmm. you know. Nobody can have an intelligent conversation about it anymore because everyone's passions are so inflamed.
And that's the problem with the country. Between our arguments here, between our arguments out in the streets, and between the arguments in Congress and the Senate.
Yes.
That's
Facebook.
The problem. And Facebook. But the most serious problem is that it's been the culture of this country where we can't, I mean, every, all this, you know, him and I will go out, there's got to be a meeting of the mind where there's compromise.
You know, another interesting piece to steer us away from this hot topic.
Because we just spent time on this whole interview, we got to get back to it.
Yes.
Another, there's a time and a place. This is
I understand. Steer us back.
That's my job. One of the interesting things, you know, I asked her, does she anticipate security being amped up in the wake of this?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, she described much more security than what we deal with on a daily basis. Because you go into your average building, your bank or whatever, there's not three layers of security. There's not a metal detector. In your government buildings, yes.
Right.
But you go into Manhattan, it's not on lockdown.
No, not at all.
So it's kind of interesting that they already do it. I'm glad we're not on lockdown.
Yes. Yes.
I understand why we have to have the security we have, but that being said, I mean, the half-assed security at the football game, I could do without. You barely touch my bag, you put a little stick in, let's get moving on, I want to get to my seats.
Yeah.
You know what? We should be so lucky if a bomb went off during the Jets game. We should be, hopefully on the bench. We should be so lucky if both New York football teams got taken out and both teams could redraft.
Quick thing, you saw a little comment on the score?
Yeah,
that
I saw just
like, I got vault. Score like that in an NFL game ever.
but Al-Qaeda, ISIS would never attack the Jets or the Giants because it wouldn't be a loss to this country.
That's not a joke.
No, it's not. I'm tempted to give Geno Smith a strap-on bomb. Go and get some chocolate, stupid. Have some Vegemite and chocolate. Go on, Geno.
They would have Rex Ryan in the orange suit, and then they go, "How am I going to behead him?" Well, God, it's mostly more than Jets management has done about him.
No, I don't want you taking innocent people. I want you taking the offensive line.
Yeah. They're very offensive to us. Yes.
We want your leader. There is none.
Coughlin, he was going to leave anyway.
The coach can't find a decent QB. You tell us where there's one.
Well, now we found a use for the Jets and the Giants. See, terrorism's funny. I think that's the message from our show.
Well, New York
football's not.
No.
We can use them as human shields.
Did you see that? You watched the Jet game, right?
I was listening to it in the car.
I posted this thing. I told Pip before the show. I posted on Facebook. Did not get the attention it should have. You know who Eric Decker is, right?
Yeah.
The big Jets wide receiver. Yeah. Paid him a lot of money. Supposed to be their number one wide receiver. Every game he's dropping a big pass.
Yeah.
I go, Eric Decker's dropped more balls than the locker room at the senior center.
Yeah.
And we move on. This is why you should follow me, at Davin Comedy, on Twitter.com. Anyway, I thought Julie did a very in-depth piece, and she just wanted me to mention. I guess there was a segment. She was listening, and she wanted me to mention this. There's a case before the court saying that was about to be heard where a woman allegedly scammed four guys. It hasn't been proven yet.
Wow.
Allegedly. I didn't recall that in this part of the interview. I thought I was listening to it.
No, I was listening too. Did we? Don't remember hearing that.
No, neither do I. But she says she heard it. So Julie might have voices in her head, or we don't pay attention to what I say. Either one is very possible.
I think the second one is very possible for me.
I know it's very possible. Thank you, Joe. There'll be more to that. But so we'll do part two next week. So one of the criticisms of this article, the piece on Tracy and the other victims, it was posted by another paper, I guess a sister paper to the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age. I don't know their relationship, but that happens a lot. They share articles and everything.
Right.
And there was a little blurb about the article and everything. And, of course, this was on Facebook and everything. Okay. Of course, a link to the article where it was. It was an in-depth article.
Mm-hmm.
and everything. So, of course, you had all the people saying how stupid the victims are.
Oh, I don't like
that. You know, I guess if you don't know about this.
Right.
And what I always try to explain is, you know what, you're hearing the victim, you're not hearing how advanced these scam syndicates are. You know, it's we all think of the Nigerian lottery.
Yeah, because that is so plainly, obviously,
you would
stupid.
You would think,
you know.
But clearly it still works on some level. But these romance scams are more nuanced. Yes. So you had that argument.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had some scam victims going off on Julie, quite honestly, up saying, you know, these journalists don't do an in-depth interview. You know, they don't present the facts. And I said, actually, she did a really
in-depth. Yeah. There's so many parallel
lines.
Well,
let me finish. Then you can add in. I go, she actually did a very in-depth interview. If you read the articles, you'll see that. And remember, editors cut things out. You know, they have certain space. But I think when you talk to her, or when I spoke to her, you could hear, just from the first half of that interview, how much she learned. Because this was a woman that wasn't really into this. Think about how naive we were the first months we did this. And our learning curve, we did not learn it that quickly.
No.
So I think it was unfair.
Yeah.
You could tell this woman knows the subject matter, Joe.
It was a lot of parallel lines, a lot of things. She did her homework on that. A lot of stuff that she's found out that took us 2 years to figure out, you know, she was saying. Also, one key thing that she said was about the Marine, when she actually talked to the real Marine.
Think it was a Marine. I think it was Army.
Army, okay. But
I'm not sure.
He did, regardless, he did do the right thing, saying, well, would you ever be interested in me? And he said no.
I thought that was the right tack.
It was the right, because it's closure.
Yeah.
Now, I know the victim. We're going to interview her. We're going to do a very in-depth interview. I'm probably going to do it later on this week.
Tracy.
Yeah, Tracy. That rocked her to the core.
Oh.
But I can get that, because you fall in love with this picture, even though it's not the real guy. True. In your head, even though you know, you still can't come to terms with it. But, you know, I'm writing all these lovey-dovey things. We had all these conversations in this picture. And then the real guy goes, nah, it's not going to happen. No, the guy's married.
Yeah.
The guy's a married guy. Yeah. What's he going to say?
If
he says, you know what, I throw it to you, that's just going to cause more problems.
It's going to prolong it. And it's just like this image. See, the image of the person that you will have, even though they're not interested, represents all the emotions that you had. You're assigning all your emotions to this picture because you were misled to this picture.
Right.
So it's kind of a heartbreaking thing where if this photo will no longer represent that, this happiness that you had, this peace that you had, this day in and day out writing, that it will no longer represent. It's absolutely heartbreaking and devastating, but, you know, a lot of times in life, things go wrong and you need closure, and sometimes closure could be a cold slap in the face, but it is closure.
Well, it's like a death for people.
It is.
You know, because it's
except in this case, they're still alive.
Right.
But yeah,
I mean, but it's like the person that they believed was alive.
The person they imagined.
Suddenly dies.
They're
gone.
There's really not many shoulders to cry on.
Right.
Right. Now, it's the whole thing, going back to what you said, it's going back to the fact with Ann Jackson, why Ann goes through this, why she's being told, why she hasn't stopped, because to acknowledge it could be the death of her, or the emotional death of her.
Yes.
And that's why she keeps going. I mean, we were skeptical last week with some of her motives.
Yeah.
A little bit. There was that, what did I say last week? 5% of that coming in that I'm still questioning it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, for the 95%, I still believe that to acknowledge that Brown Cotton and all these guys that are not real would be the emotional death of her.
Yeah, she's not ready. She's not prepared.
There's not a closure moment. There's not a closure moment that happens. And a closure moment, people are scared to death of.
Mm-hmm.
It's not pretty. It's devastating.
Yeah.
It needs to happen to this one woman in the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of, for better or different, it did.
Yeah.
Because it is what it is, and it needs to be, it's a very heartbreaking thing. There's a lot of times where we've gotten involved with the stories, and it's like, well, this will be goodbye then. Goodbye. We'll laugh. But if we had an emotional, a really emotional investment in it, that's devastating.
I got sad when Belinda went bye-bye.
I kind of got sad,
I did too.
And we're scamming these people. We're goofing. We're making jokes. And even though it's a scam and it's to get jokes,
We got a little bad, you know.
And
oh
now
my God.
Imagine them being your moon and stars and sun.
It's devastating. It's devastating. Something that therapy, and that's why we say with some of these folks, you know, go to therapy, get help, get it out.
Yeah.
Because it's emotional.
It left a little mark on us. And hell, we're trying to get laughs out of
it. Hey, we're three jackasses.
We're three jackasses. Emotionally involved with the person.
You know, so when people go, you guys, you know, you don't understand. We do. We actually do.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was really unfair. It was an unfair criticism of the people that wrote and said that Julie did not understand or go in depth with the scamming, scam victims.
Well, I think what they did is what they accused her of. They didn't read.
They scammed.
Like I said, she did. I don't know any paper that's doing three articles in a video.
I know.
On this.
It's like, don't comment on stuff if you're like, oh, TLDR, I don't have time for this. But if you are going to sit there and read what she said, even in Davin's interview with her on the phone just now, you could hear her sort of breaking up when she realized the heartbreak of Tracy at that moment. You know, she really felt for the victims. And
well, I know, and we'll get into it more in the second half of the interview, I believe. But when I was talking to Julie, you know, she, and from what Tracy told me, you know, there were times, you know, there was tears. Tears were shared.
Yeah, sure.
It's hard. I mean, you're talking to this person and you see that this victim is now a shell of himself because somebody wanted to get $20 for an iPhone and, you know, whatever it is. A life has been ruined.
Yeah.
And like I said, for the people that said, well, you know, she really didn't dig deep enough. All right, let's do a little consensus with us here and our folks in the chat. Do you think she was spot on a lot of stuff? I think she was spot on pretty damn well everything.
No.
Oh, yeah.
So for somebody
she knows her stuff.
Yeah, but so somebody that was quote-unquote, she really didn't dig deep. The hell she didn't.
Listen,
she was spot on with a lot
could not,
with everything.
She yeah, could not anything. Have had the conversation with me. That she had, and let's be fair, Julie carried a lot of that conversation.
Absolutely.
She was a very easy interview.
Yes.
Yes.
She could not have carried that conversation if she didn't know her stuff.
Absolutely.
And people don't understand the journalism process. They just don't. Listen, I've been frustrated. You know, how many times have we been mentioned or alluded to, but we didn't get the name of the show in the paper? And I hear the editors, well, they had to cut it and everything.
And let's also look at another thing. Yeah. Look at a story that that might be in a paper that you might be involved, you know, know somebody or know the situation that happens to be in the pen, happens from time to time, and you will look at the story and go, that's wrong. Where did they get that? What the fuck?
That just happened to me Sunday. I was interviewed for something about work. Mm-hmm. I read the author of the article sent the link to my workplace. I read it and I'm like, yeah, that's not what I said.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the hell did he get this up from? So with
how did you twist it that way?
Right. So
I know because I actually read the article before Tracy did.
Okay.
I read the article. I go, and it was only part one. So so I don't think Tracy knew there was more parts coming out. Mm-hmm. But when I read her part of it, I said, I think you're going to be happy with this.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know if she's going to be happy, but I just read, it's pretty in-depth.
But
I think you're going to be happy.
Right, so here's the thing. So with what we just discussed, and you being pretty much the expert on this, and for us just hear it because we've been doing it, for us to go, hey, this is pretty spot on 100%, it's a credit to her, and it's to dissuade anybody that says she didn't do her homework because we know the background, we know that, and it was damn spot on.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You're going to get another crack at this next week. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the second part of our interview with Julie. Then we're going to have an interview with Tracy. And on this format, our show, I can do as long as I want because I'll just chop it up and we'll do play it over weeks.
Right.
But I can go with her from the beginning to the middle to what she hopes to be and everything. But then you can compare it to what Julie did. And I think you're going to see, I could be wrong, but I think you're going to see at the part where Julie was allowed to cover, because again, space is an issue. She doesn't get final say. She has an editor, those pricks.
Yeah.
You're going to see, she's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
You know, there's other parts that we didn't get to. That's going to be in part two of what Julie covered in the article. She actually backtracked me on something. Go, well, hey, I want to talk about this.
Oh,
and the thing about it is, if you've got that much, if everything, you know, and if you have 100% concise material, 100% concise material, if it is going to be edited, it's 100% concise. So when it goes into the edit, it'll be concise.
Let me tell you, so I've worked with Tracy on these. I'm kind of helping her go through the media process. And everything.
Right.
Trying to explain you know, how it works and everything with the editing. Because you get flustered. You go, I want all this. It can't be. She's verbose. She's got a lot to say. This is her life.
Yes.
And everything. And Julie spent a couple of days with her.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, listen. I know when I talk about our show to people, there's always more I want to add.
Right.
You know, listen, the last article, the one that Julie did that mentioned us, Joe was thrilled because he finally got included in it. It's not that I don't mention Joe and Pip on every interview I do. I just don't have control over what they print.
Of course not.
Right. And also, when you read other articles, you know, you don't go, you know, I'm not in it. The article is about scammers. It's not about, what is Joe Curry doing? Pip doing a shit. They don't give a shit. They just want to get to
the try not to break the equipment.
Right. they need to get to the meat and potatoes of the article. So, you know, you don't sit there and go, oh, that's what. No, it's not about me or Pip. It's about, or even doubt. It's about, you know, get to the point, get to the facts. You know, so it was nice in this that the, you know, they got to mention in there. But you understand. You know, we're in the media. It's the way it is.
So, like I said, we'll do part two of that next week. I thought it was very interesting. I thought, you know, the stuff from what's going on with Sydney was timely.
That was very good, very insightful as well. It was nice.
Yeah, very interesting to see how they handle it.
Unfortunate, but you know what I'm saying.
It was a tragedy, and we happened to have somebody who was tangentially involved. It really worked out
for
us.
Right in the same block. Wow, hey, you know. But
I'm just really annoyed that nobody brought back samples.
Let's rephrase. Unfortunate, but fascinating.
Things people say after sex with Joe Curry. The reviews are in. Well, I know one person that's hoping that's not the truth, but I'll move on. Just a pal. Anyway. If you get a music box, it's probably a regift. But anywho. And Joe has cleaning to do after the show. Not my mess. We'll move on. All right. Let's do a little catfishing, a little scamming the scammers back in our own right. We will revisit Sue and Mickey Wynn.
Joe's like, boy. Hey, whoa, whoa. Always and forever.
You know, I just got to say one quick thing. You know, that's my wedding song. You know what you know what it's like?
This?
You know what it's like hearing that every week?
Oh,
that's your wedding song?
Why did you
always
do that to yourself?
I thought you meant the bongos because you're Kong.
Oh, no, it's coming now. You're living in a hut. But
that's really your
wedding song? That was my wedding song.
Well, you did that to yourself. You picked that for this.
I know. But
you put the piece together. You did it to yourself. Wallowing, it's stupid.
He's like, I had no idea how long I'd have to hear it.
You know what? That's like when you stick, like we were talking about earlier, when you stick yourself out in the car. Well, you know, now you sit and enjoy, Joe.
Yeah, they should rename the song to, well, not so much.
But, by always and forever, I mean a period of years, and not really anymore. Yeah. That would be fascinating if that was, would the music box play that?
Ah, that's funny.
All right, so when we last left off with Mickey Wynn and our grandmother, the scam baiter, Sue,
right?
Mickey had two wonderful ideas for Sue to do. Two wonderful ideas. Sue could fly Mickey to California.
Yeah, ideal.
They could hang out there. She could take care of him there.
Yes.
Get a hotel or an apartment. They could do that. Or plan B, because, you know, Sue's in Britain. She can fly to Ghana, and they can get a hotel there or an apartment. Now, Sue was worried about it. It's like, well, you know, it can be dangerous for a white woman. But Mickey's like, no. I got you. You're with me. What could possibly go wrong? Okay, stay away from Mavis, Belinda's husband, the IT guy in our syndicate.
Don't go to any cafes.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? Yeah. So, June 2nd, we'll continue, shall we?
Yes.
Mickey to Sue, is Mark your lover? Sue goes, Mark who? He called you darling, Mickey says. And then she says, Mark, the last name. He's a really good friend that I counsel as he's disabled with a lot of problems. If you look at his page, he calls everyone darling. What is he, Billy Crystal?
Probably.
Darling. So Mickey goes, okay, I miss you, babe. Listen, you're a scammer. You don't need this conflict right now. You're still in the grooming stage.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, my scammers never had a problem fighting with me.
Yeah, really?
my scammers were always ready to go to war. Belinda called me a fat ass, an old.
she was like a rock'em sock'em robot.
I mean, to the point when we went, I'm like, you're supposed to be a romance scammer.
I know.
You're very bad at this.
Where's the romance?
You're bad at this job.
Yeah, but you were a federal case. I mean, you know, you were a handful. I mean, you know.
I don't deserve to be talked down about. Scam me. Yeah. Woo me off my feet and take my money. Don't treat me like shit. I can have a real relationship for that.
Scam me, baby.
Scam me like you want it. So he goes, oh, okay, I miss you, babe. Sue's like, if you want to check, look at his page. Then you can see he calls everyone darling. Miss you too, sweetie. Mickey goes, why did you send me a friend request? She goes, what? We're already friends. He goes, I know, but I just want to know why you sent me a friend request. She goes, oh, do you mean before we chatted? She goes, if you don't want to be friends, delete me. Now, I can answer Mickey's question right here. I know why Sue sent Mickey a friend request.
Why?
Because I told it to.
Because Davin sent me.
Now, that's not in the conversation. But, hey.
Of course, because Davin told me. Who's Davin? Never
mind. Well, I'm sure he knows.
Mickey is Mavis's brother. Mm-hmm. Mavis, yes. Mills, Dick Eldorado's ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
So, you know, and of course.
The late Dick Eldorado.
Yes, the late Dick Eldorado, because he's never here on time.
God rest his soul. Oh,
So, but remember, Mavis was all concerned that I was saying he was stealing stuff.
Right.
So I said to Sue, I go, enough of this nonsense. You need to make a new friend.
And not mention my name, because I think that would make their little ears perk up.
Yes. See, Joe, you complain I give you homework. I'm giving her homework across an ocean.
Strangers now. Strangers now.
Well, I mean, I know Sue. We're internet friends, but I don't have the same sway that I do with a Joe or a you that I do with Sue. But still, that was time to get it cracking. There's a show that needs to be written. And he ain't going to write it himself. All right. So, June 3rd. Mickey goes, I'm just asking why. She goes, because I thought you looked nice. But delete me if you want, Mickey. She's taking that. You know what?
She's like, whatever,
dude. We love each other, but I don't need this. A little saucy. Yeah. She's not in yet. This tells Mickey, she's not in. I got to up my game a little bit.
She's ready to dump my ass if I get too nasty with her.
Which is a tactic that I did with Belinda all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Dump my ass then.
Exactly. Even when we were on the last, you know, the last days of our relationship, there was give and take. I love you, get the hell out of here, I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah, that was every day, and it was more. It was, and towards the end, it was a lot of hardball.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
She goes, because I thought you looked nice, but delete me if you want. Mickey goes, don't worry, I just want to know, can you use a computer now, please? She goes, well, there's a reason you now wonder why I sent the request. He goes, because I want to see you on webcam, and it looks like you're not ready. That's not the question I asked, stupid.
That's not it.
She goes, it's because I'm sick in bed, so that's not my fault. Remember, she's been ill.
And she's been talking about her puke.
Like, exactly. During sexy talk.
Yes.
And she continues, I can't go on cam anyway. Laugh my ass off. Mickey goes, just for 1 minute, please. Just stand up and do it for me. 1 minute. It won't hurt you. He really wants that
stand
image.
Stand up and do it for me.
And now, in this case, she knows what Mickey looks like.
Yeah.
So Mickey's not afraid. Mickey's scamming with his real profile.
Okay.
You know, this isn't or at least one of his real. It's really him.
Yeah, but I mean, now he hasn't seen a picture of her yet, has he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think
she was using on her page.
She was using her profile.
Okay.
I don't know what picture she had up there. I mean, there are pictures of her.
Her actual profile.
She'll superimpose her face. She'll Photoshop her face.
Oh, so it's Photoshopped. It's not a genuine photo.
Well, it's genuinely her face.
Right.
You know, she'll put herself on these bikini things or whatever. You know. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so you know, but you know, she's a grandma. I mean, she's a good. She's a fine-looking woman and everything, but she's a grandma. So you got this grandma on this hot bikini face. On the hot bikini body.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe Mickey wants to enjoy himself to it. I don't know. He's a young boy. There's, you know, he's got to get the demon out. Anyway. So Sue goes, in other words, you want me to get out of bed, go downstairs, and put my laptop on, LOL. He goes, yeah, please. You can bring the laptop to your bed. See, Mickey's a problem solver.
Yeah, you know what? Hey, that might even be good. I could engage her in sexy talk.
Yes. She goes, I guess you don't believe I am who I say I am, LOL.
Oh.
She goes, I believe you, but want to see you. I want to look into your beautiful eyes, please. Now, this is kind of role reversal.
Yeah. Because
usually it's the victim goes, no, I want to see you.
I want to see you.
And it's the scapegoat goes, oh, I can't. I mean, we dealt with that with Belinda.
Yes.
You know. She goes, my eyes look like crap right now because I'm sick, LOL. My speakers don't work on my laptop, so I can't talk. He goes, you don't have to talk. I only want to see you. Don't talk, please.
How many men have wished to say that?
We were talking about that earlier in the show, the attractions of the BJ. Mm.
Yes.
She goes, okay, I will get dressed and get out of my sick bed, but I'll only go on the cam for a minute because I look bad. He goes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you look like shit.
What a team player.
Listen, it's just two kids trying to make this happen. You got to respect that. He goes, oh, okay. She goes, okay, but I will take some time to get downstairs and put my laptop on, LOL. He goes, okay, love, I'll be waiting. And she goes, I will go on Messenger because I know how it works, LOL. He goes, okay, are you online at Yahoo? He goes, hello. Then we're on June 4th. I don't think they ever had that talk.
Yeah, okay.
I asked her about that today, and she goes, no, I don't think we did. I go, well, it looks like you did. She goes, if we did, it was only for a minute because he didn't show himself on the camera.
Oh.
So, because I was curious about this. Like, oh, I don't have
these
traces.
It's like,
she show herself on the camera?
She doesn't recall doing it, but she says if she did, it was very brief.
Hmm.
I'm thinking not. I'm thinking she didn't.
Yeah. Did somebody drug her cappuccino?
Hmm. Funny. You see on the camera.
Looks like, sound like Cosby drank his own cappuccino.
Drank the wrong one. I'm going to fondle myself. You see.
Like, I don't know if that's Cosby or Sling Blade. I'm not really sure.
No, this is Sling Blade. I'm going to find this is Cosby's doing.
There you go.
All right. An impressionist, you're not.
I'm going to fondle myself.
That wouldn't be a crime. He'd still be getting gigs if he just would have done that.
I know. I wish he had. I didn't want to see it, though.
June 4th. He goes, hi, babe. How you doing, honey? June 5th. Not good, but I'll be okay, she says. June 6th. Hello, babe. She goes, hey, sweetie, just had my daughter here, so I'm going to have a shower and freshen up. Hope you're okay. He goes, I miss you so much. How is your daughter and you? I miss you so much. Were you able to go to work? Tell me something, because I miss you. She goes, hey, babe, hey, baby. My daughter is fine, but I'm still sick, so I'm resting a lot. I'm taking my medication, though. He goes, babe, I miss you. Sue goes, I miss you too, baby. How are you? He goes, I'm good, honey. Ugh. She goes, that's good. So what did you do today, baby, today? He goes, nothing. Just same old story. Scammed a couple of people. Went to the internet cafe, checked on some accounts. She goes, I had my youngest son here all day. And that was June 6th. Should I do another day or not?
What
do
you want?
June 7th. Okay. Forget about the time. June 7th. June 7th. Hey. She goes, hi, hon. How you doing today? He goes, I'm fine. She goes, I like your new pics. He goes, thanks, babe. How are you?
I'm sorry. He likes the new pics.
He put new pictures.
Oh, pictures. I'm sorry.
New pictures of himself. And she likes them.
Okay.
He asks how she is. She goes, I'm okay. Just really tired. He goes, okay. She goes, just been chatting to my youngest son. She goes, I see, and how is he doing? You know, a real family guy, this Mickey Wynn.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't admit to having a sister named Mavis, but a real family guy wants to know how Sue's family's doing. You got to like that. It's a good guy.
Yeah, I'm just still baffled why they're hey babying so fast. It's like,
because it's a scam relationship, Stephen.
I know.
That's why.
Yeah,
where you been for 2 years?
I know, really.
I know, but it's
how does this work?
Who would start doing that so fast? I mean, the
scammers and victims.
The scammer should, but why is the victim?
I know
it's
because she's baiting, stupid.
I know. But she's an. I'm going to get her out of the barrel.
Thank you.
It just seems odd because I get all these all the time. It just seems right off the bat they start with this stuff.
Yeah,
but victims respond too.
I understand, but it just seems odd looking out of the fishbowl how they do this so quickly.
Yeah.
Nobody said every scammer was worth his salt and go. But you know, friend request somebody you don't know and start talking about the stock market.
No.
I mean, you
but
know.
But you don't say, you know, you don't, she get them, you know, from time to, hello, my love, how are you? Who the hell are you?
Why wouldn't you? It works. They wouldn't do it if it doesn't work.
I know,
if you're in a certain frame of, if you're in a certain vulnerable, yes,
they don't know there's some creep on the other end playing with them too.
But the funny thing is, why wouldn't you? You know, it's a shame though because you're in a vulnerable place. Why would anybody right off the bat that you just met? Hi, honey, how are you?
I'd be like, who the fuck is this?
But and some do. And that's how the scammer knows, okay, I don't want to talk to this one.
Yes. So
they're weeding them out.
So if you're sending out 10 of them, for every 8 go to hells, you know, you get 2 that might
I don't think it's even 20%, but that's the theory.
Right.
You send out a bunch of these, and if that's why we've talked about this before. Some of these scams, how would anybody fall for this? They're purposely ridiculous.
Yes.
Because somebody will. You send out 1,000, one person responds.
Right.
Now we go to work.
Right. It's
go.
Almost like the sales ratio. If you go out, if you go on 8 calls, you expect to bring 2 back in. You know, you're not going to get all 8, but the ratios, if you're bringing in 2 to 3 back in, then it's it's good.
Yeah.
All right. So she continues, he's okay, but missed his flight to France today, so I had to pay for another one that got lost in France, So she had to pay, so his flight to France, so had to pay. I guess maybe he had to pay. I'm trying to figure if she's offering money or not. She's saying I got money for that, but maybe he had to pay.
To fly to France?
Yeah. No, because you know, if she had to pay for it, it's a little red meat.
Yeah,
I got some money for you. So he laughs. She goes, I guess he needs someone to go with. She goes, he usually travels with her workmate, but because he got a new job there, he was alone. Mickey goes, okay, babe, I have to go now. My time is up. I'm in a cafe. Of course you are. She goes, okay, baby. He goes, love you. She goes, take care always. Love you, baby. He goes, love you more.
Oh, my God. Now, I was just going to say that as a joke.
Now, this goes back to what we were talking about with Julie.
Yes.
Julie Power. The adulation. Yeah. The love. It's intoxicating.
The immediacy of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Is disconcerting.
And it goes back to what I say. When you're a teenager or a preteen, you're throwing that out right around.
Right.
You know, these are quick emotions.
Yeah. And also somebody caring about what you're doing. Like, you're talking about your most, mundane details, and they're, fascinated. Really? Did you eat corn on the cob? Wow.
Scammers always want to know what you're eating. It's like, wow, somebody's got food, and it's not bugs. Anyway, I'll digress. Wait, I'm sorry. Joe, you're right. You shook your head at me. How dare I stereotype the scammers? You were right, Joe. I was completely out of line.
I hate to hurt your feelings. I laughed. I shook my head because I thought it was funny.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, dude. How dare I be complimentary?
It throws me.
Yeah,
it's like I told Pip on Facebook, don't you dare come to this show in a good mood. We won't know how to handle it.
Don't worry, it won't happen.
And it didn't.
It didn't.
Win for all of us.
Good mood.
What?
Was it a good
Not
mood?
Not you.
Oh.
He was talking about me.
Yeah.
Oh.
So Mickey goes, love you more. She goes, kisses for you. He goes, hugs for you. And then they're sending little emoticons.
I like the way she goes right in, man.
Oh, yeah.
Full shovel.
He must have.
Full shovel, man. Good girl.
He must have wrote something. It doesn't show up. But she goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Wow, baby. Oh, my God. Wow. Thanks, baby. And he goes, love you so much. They started talking on May 25th. It is June 7th.
That's what I mean.
She goes, love you too, baby. Good night. And then there's more emoticons that didn't come up. Then he goes, do you know what design means? I love you. Count the love. I don't know. And then she goes, bye.
Good for her. Yeah, good girl. Good girl.
And he goes, see ya. And then she goes, I love you 8. I don't know what happened there.
It might be like a little love you 8.
No, he goes, love you
love
more.
You
this
forever.
Is,
maybe
this
that's
is...
a love you forever. Maybe it was the infinity sign.
Oh.
Love you forever.
Oh, good, Joe. Good thing you're here. She didn't know and I didn't know.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
He goes, love you more. Enough. Hang up the phone.
That's what I mean.
Hang up the phone. My father's coming. He's going to walk in and I'm whacking it to you. This. Hang up the phone.
My wife's pulling in the driveway. Yeah. What?
She's going to get half the stuff. Sign off Facebook. What?
Exactly.
How did truth get in there? Anyway. inside stuff that's no longer inside. Anyway. Because we share too much.
Yeah.
Davinston, were we oversharing?
Hey, listen, I burped in my wife's mouth. We all share a lot. Ew. Nobody's looking at me as knight in shining armor after that one.
Hell no.
Yuck.
No.
I stink.
I farted in front of my boss.
Just don't do it in front of this boss. Anyway. She goes, thanks, baby, me too. He goes, me too. Ugh. She goes, hey, babe.
I know.
She goes, I thought you'd gone, baby.
Still hanging on, waiting to say
Jesus
goodbye.
Christ.
Last day, June 8th. Then I can't take no more of this. And we're not doing this next week. We'll go back to Ann Jackson next week.
Okay.
Mickey goes, hey, love. Sue goes, hey, baby. Sorry I haven't replied, but my daughter's here with her husband and kids. Hope you're okay today. Mickey goes, I'm okay. Well, honey, let's talk when you're free, babe. Although I wish I could talk to them. Hope you don't mind.
What's he going to say?
Hey, you guys, we're the same age. Maybe we could play football when we're in the same country.
Oh!
How much money does mom have? Or grandmom, yeah, as the case might be.
Right?
She goes, it's too crazy for you to talk to them, baby, as they have four kids and they're going crazy, LOL. Mickey goes, babe, I love you so much. Sue goes, I love you too, baby kisses. He goes, what are you up to, honey? She goes, I guess it's later in the day. I just woke up, baby, LOL. Are you okay? He goes, hey, baby, give me the number for your WhatsApp app. That's a way you can chat. It's WhatsApp.
Oh.
It's a chat. It's an app. Sue goes, I thought you didn't have WhatsApp, baby. He goes, I'm going to use someone's WhatsApp, so please give me the number. And he said it twice. So she gives the phone number, and it's her number. I think that's what you need to contact me, a UK number. And that is where we left off.
It's bizarre how they went 100 different ways to talk to people.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm talking to you on Facebook, but I want you to go to Yahoo, and I want you to go here, and I want to talk to you on
They
want to
isolate you. Mm-hmm. Wherever you do not have other people who can see what's going on,
yeah,
and feed in it, because then they can work their magic. As scammers, that's what they do. They isolate. One of the tactics to do, get you on a different platform.
Mm-hmm.
Or say, hey, no, everybody's your family doesn't understand how much we mean to each other. They don't get our love. So you turn against your family when your family's going, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Knock it off. This isn't real. Yeah. The scammer's like, you know, like teens do.
Yeah.
Man, Dad, you don't get it, man. He loves me. Yeah, as a chick would say, or me coming out of the closet, apparently. You know, but that's what you do when
you burped in my face.
It takes a real man to burp in my face and stand there like an asshole.
Looking surprised and terrified.
So, yeah. So we will leave it there. We will continue with this in 2 weeks. With Sue and Mickey Wynn. Next week we'll do Ann Jackson, and we'll do part two of the interview with Julie Power from the Sydney Morning Herald.
Very good.
Work for you, Joe?
Yep.
No, very good. Because I couldn't bear to live with myself if it didn't.
You get by.
We couldn't bear to live with you either.
All right, set myself up for that. what am I looking for? Yeah, now's a good time to knock the shit over. As I say, I just asked him, don't break the equipment.
Sorry about that.
And she almost did. All right, let's thank some folks, shall we?
Mm. Yes.
Family Martial Arts. It's great for learning karate and self-defense. Perfect to do together as a family or by yourself. Whether you want to learn in a class environment or you want private lessons, Family Martial Arts is the dojo for you. Give them a call to learn more, 845-469-1716, 845-469-1716, or check them out at FamilyMartialArtsGoshen.com, FamilyMartialArtsGoshen.com. Great dojo, man. Go there. You'll learn a lot. Francesco's. If you're in the mood for great Italian food, then you need to go to Francesco's in Woodland Park, New Jersey. Chef-owner Frank Giancarelli cooks authentic Italian cuisine made with the freshest ingredients and panache. Little man, Francesco is your place to go with friends and family. The restaurant has a Mediterranean decor done in a non-pretentious way. But I said pretentious in a pretentious way. I was emphasizing. So if they said pretentious, it wouldn't sound pretentious like me.
I think you should say pretentious with a lot of panache.
Not pretentious, bitches! See, that's saying non-pretentious in a non-pretentious way.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. But they're non-pretentious. And they won't call you bitches. They're very nice there.
They are nice.
They are nice.
And they do have really good food.
They have great food.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, it feels cozy and intimate, yet still elegant. Francesco's even has a private party room where you can host your family get-togethers, Christmas parties, all sorts of stuff. Francesco's features off-site catering as well. Stop by Francesco's for lunch or dinner at 568 McBride Avenue in Woodland Park, New Jersey. Or give them a call at 973-925-1100, 973-925-1100. You can go to their website, francescos-restaurant.com, and, of course, ask about their next comedy show. Goldberg's Famous Bagels and Kosher Style Deli of Chester, New York. brings a fresh, delicious water bagel of New York City to Orange County, New York. Every morning, a wide variety of bagels are made fresh on premises for your enjoyment. If you've ever had a Goldberg's bagel, then you can never have a frozen bagel again. You can't. You won't.
Never.
Never.
Never! Goldberg's has the perfect schmear for your bagel as they feature an extensive variety of cream cheese. They got like olives in there. They got the scallions. They got the veggie. They got the blueberry cream cheese. There's a lot of cream cheese going on there. They even have low fat choices, which, you know what, after the holidays, not a bad idea.
Yeah, really. It's like, okay, dial this back.
Yeah. Goldberg's famous bagels and kosher style deli also offers premium meats for their mouth-watering sandwiches. They offer some unique daily specials like the zombie, which is a potato pancake covered in fresh brisket.
Yum.
And smothered in homemade gravy, or the Bronx Bomber, which is a square Knish corned beef, Russian dressing, and sauerkraut. Whether you want breakfast, lunch, or dinner, Goldberg's can feed your craving. Goldberg's famous bagels and kosher style deli is great for when you want to eat out or order in. Or have them carry that next special event. Goldberg's delivers every time. Open 5 a.m. Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. on the weekends. Visit them, 69 Brookside Avenue, Chester, New York, or give them a call, 845-469-8505. And, of course, if you're a fan of this show, and if you're listening, you are, or a veteran, you get 10% off. Side-splitting productions. You guys need a comedian, murder mystery, a child's performer, you know, a face painter, character like your Santa Claus. Give us a call, 551-404-3094, 551-404-3094, sidesplittingproductions.com.
I'm glad you blew your number.
Yeah, well, nobody else will blow anything on me. Side-splitting productions.
It's your burp at them.
Not while they're doing that. That would just be rude, Joe. And how could I burp in their mouth? Their mouth's already full, stupid. It makes no sense. Now, when they come up, I might to keep them away. Because the deed's been done, and scram, I need a nap.
Okay.
Because I'm a romantical. Anyway, Pip, anything?
Nope.
Joe, anything?
Not a damn thing.
Okay.
Except for Santa, but nobody cares about that.
Well, only when it goes horribly wrong.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
No.
Yes.
This just in.
This just
finally
in.
Finally something nobody can argue with.
I'm an idiot. I forgot. Johnny and the Alimonies are going to be playing on Saturday, December 21st at Hudson House in Nyack, New York, where they are going to be participating in Blank Fest, which is an annual event where the collection of blankets is your invitation into a day-long event of music.
Nice.
Yeah, the blankets are there.
What about me? I'm a towel. Surely I could cover something.
Oh, give the homeless a break. The things are distributed to the homeless. We don't want to give them that.
Homeless need a sock, too.
Now, sloppy, we can't all help, but we can donate.
Yeah, Joe donates a lot.
That's right, Chiz Sock.
Joe's a giver. I guess I'm what Romney would call a taker.
That's right, Chiz Sock. You know, when you're hanging on the mantle with the other socks, know that you're giving in this time of need.
Why do the other stockings and socks look at me differently? I think they're jealous. Because I'm your favorite, right?
Because you're stiff as a surfboard.
They're just full of coal. We know what you're full of.
I'm so sad. Aww. I'm the only sock Santa won't stick anything in.
No,
wait a minute. Hold the phone. I know a Santa that will stick something in you.
I'm his little elf.
Now, Chizzy, you can help on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, because you're going to be alone with your gift of ramen noodles.
That's right, Chizzy, I will be.
Crying to your stupid music box. I'll be there for you.
I'm sure you will, Chizzy.
Don't forget me. We'll have a buffet, Joe.
Sloppy, you're always involved. I gotta go to bed. Get this shit over.
Look at this bed. No, it's almost our time. That's how he says it. No romance. I gotta go to bed. Where are you, Chizzy? Let's go. No romance. I think it's left. He doesn't even get me good gifts. He got me a spool of thread. I got no fingers. I can't fix the hole in me. What a prick. Everybody, I've never said that to him before. I never say what a prick. I said, where's the prick? I'm done. I'm out of here. Merry fucking Christmas, you rip-off Santa Claus.
And I'm coming too.
Yeah, he never waits for me to come. Just once put me in with the lint towels. All that extra lint. Just once let me go in the dryer. You selfish prick. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Just wait for the fuckers.
We'll be right back.